And welcome to What the World Needs Now. As your host, Ken Johnston, and I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you so much for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. We can't do it without you, and with your support, we're able to bring you great shows like the one we have for you today. Really not an announcement, but I know that the Philadelphia Phillies are on right now, and so make sure you keep the volume up on the radio and turn the volume off on the TV as you watch the Phillies, and it looks like they just scored a run. So I'll give you brief updates as we go through the show, perhaps. But, Patrick just put up the sign. It's 2-0. 2-0 Phillies. So go Phillies. You know, with all the crazy stuff that's going on in this city of ours, again, it looks like we're going to set another record for the number of murders in the Philadelphia. It looks like we'll probably set another record for the number of overdoses in Philadelphia. And it's interesting how sports can sometimes bring people together. And even if it's only for a night or for a few days until the parade happens after one of these big wins. But, you know, so I just encourage you, if you've got the Phillies game on, that's fine. Just leave the radio turned up, because I think we got a great show for you in the 5 o'clock hour. I'm joined today by Kristen Van Uden, and I apologize, Kristen. I don't have your biography in front of me, and I know Kristen works for Sophia Institute, and we've had her on a number of times in the past, and it's usually as a substitute for authors that are no longer walking around on the planet or perhaps don't speak English. Sophia Institute, exactly. Yeah, Sophia Institute's a great publishing house. Some of the books that they've put out over the last couple of years are just fantastic, and we're blessed to have Kristen join us. Like I said, when we they may republish books that are, you know, from the past, or we have authors that don't speak English very well. And
that's exactly right. I like to tell people I'm our spokesperson for all of our dead and or Italian authors. And today, we have them both in one person, Father Delindo Rotolo. So anyone who can't be here to talk about their own book.
Yeah. It's awesome, Kristen. And thanks for joining us. I know we had a mix-up when we were supposed to have the original conversation. And I was particularly looking forward to this show because my engineer that's here and a whole bunch of other people I know pray that Surrender Novena that Father Delindo Rotolo has published. And it started for me 2 years ago when a friend of mine happened to give a card, not a friend of mine, a friend of mine received from somebody the Surrender Novena. And I had never heard of it. And it's kind of spread like wildfire here, especially amongst the recovery community, because the key to all of our lives, not just those that are in recovery from addiction, is to surrender ourselves to God. And so we got a whole lot of Father Delindo Rotolo fans out there. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so one of the books.
It's funny you bring that up, actually, because I'm editor at Catholic Exchange, and I just did an interview today with a gentleman who wrote a book about basically the Catholic 12-step guide to recovery. And in his book, he really emphasizes the concept of surrender and surrender to God, because it does feel like a paradox at first that, oh, how can I be empowered through giving up? But that is really what we have to do, is surrender to God, and then that's actually when you're able to fully step into your own identity and fullness. So, yeah, very, very powerful prayer, and one that really reframes how we approach our lives.
Yeah, was that happen to be my friend Scott Wieman?
Yeah, that was him. Yeah.
How about that? Yeah. So I'm
I'm
involved with... Yeah. No, well, those of us that are Catholic and in recovery, we have a great organization called the Calyx Society. It's probably the best kept secret in the Catholic Church. It's been around for almost 75 years, and not a whole lot of people have heard about us. But it's all Catholics that are in recovery. And I think Scott didn't know about us. And, you know, I know he wrote that great book on the sacraments and for those that are in recovery, and has gone off with Catholics in recovery. So we've been, he's hooked up with us a few times in the Calyx world. And there's a number of others that are actually starting to talk amongst each other. And fortunately, folks that are involved in recovery tend to, I think, be a little humbler than others and aren't afraid to let go of their own stuff, if you will, in order to bring about God's presence in the lives of others, especially when it comes to addiction. So good on you to be with Scott. And yeah, and you're right. This Catholic world of ours is getting smaller and smaller every day, and I'm glad to be a part of it and happy you're a part of it. And
yeah, me too.
So maybe we'll start with Father Delindo then, and his book, The Afterlife, Purgatory and Heaven. And in the end of the last show, for our listeners, as kind of a lead-in, I think that dwelling on the afterlife and purgatory is something that we need to do. A lot of people, I don't think, even want to think about it. I know when I was younger, as soon as I thought about heaven, I my mind would race, and it's like, when we get to heaven, do we sleep? And when we get to heaven, do we need to eat? And what are we going to do with all this time that we have? You know, we cram so much stuff into our lives today. What are we going to cram into our lives when we get to heaven? And so I think it can be scary for some to think about, but I think Father Delindo does a great job in explaining, you know, both purgatory and maybe what the afterlife might be like.
He does, and it's such a great book because he incorporates not only scriptural teachings about purgatory, teachings from the church's tradition and magisterium, but also private revelations, so visions of certain saints who were blessed with these visions of purgatory and who were given the special role to suffer for the souls in purgatory and were blessed with being able to see them as they ascended from purgatory to heaven, to get down to some real specifics about what we can expect in purgatory and what the souls there need our help for. He also pulls from some stories that are archived at what's known as the Purgatory Museum, which is this fascinating place in Rome that has relics of souls who have appeared from purgatory to living people here on earth in order to request prayers. And this really drives home what we see in the doctrine. So, of course, we know that private revelation will never contradict big R revelation and will never contradict what the church teaches. If it does, it's a good sign that it's wrong or not from God. And so private revelation that is approved just enriches our understanding of what the church already teaches. So he draws from a number of sources to really, the message is one of understanding, but also really convicts the reader to offer up any little suffering for the souls in purgatory, because as it says in the book, one moment in purgatory is more painful than anything that we can experience on earth, because it is purifying you to be able to see God face to face.
Yeah, and I think that that's an important point to talk about, because Father Delindo and in the writing, this is a pain, not how we would experience pain here on earth. So my good friend Father McKay, who I do the show with in the 4 o'clock hour, you know, he always say, you know, they talk about this fire, and he goes, I hate to think about my relatives popping around in a frying pan in purgatory. And but the flip side of that is, and correct me if I'm wrong, so some of these things that are in the museum dedicated to the souls in purgatory, there's actually one that's got a door that's singed, if you will, from a hand that was so hot that it would cause that. But and I think in Father Delindo's writing, so he writes of that heat of that fire, not so much that it's a pain like if we put our hands in over a gas flame, as much as it is the pain that we experience because we're not with God, and
that we actually
desire that pain, that and to have anything that's not of God literally burnt out of us, so that we're able to approach God in purity, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because when you think about it, it's a metaphysical impossibility for anything that is not 100% pure to enter heaven. It just can't happen. It's like oil and water. Having any sin or pain due to sin left on your soul is just incompatible with being in the presence of God in the beatific vision. So when you think about it that way, purgatory is really a mercy because it allows this period of purification so that you may become worthy and clean to make it into heaven, rather than the alternative, which would just be hell for any even small infraction even that had been forgiven. So it's this perfect combination of God's justice and his mercy, which always go together. Whenever anyone emphasizes one over the other, they're missing the full picture. And the word purgatory comes from a Greek root, pur, P-U-R, that is the source of the word fire and also of purity, purification. And so those two concepts are synonymous in these writings, where something, it's like gold being distilled or something being, you know, all of the impurities are boiled out or heated away. That's how fire operates here on earth. So it's a very apt analogy. And like some theologians actually posit that the fires of purgatory are the same as the fires of hell. They come from the same source, but the difference obviously would be that hell is permanent and irrevocable and you're stuck there, whereas the fires of purgatory serve to purify the soul and push them up towards heaven. But you're right that the primary pain is a spiritual pain due to not being with God. And so the soul, rather than cursing their pain in purgatory or being upset about it, that they do suffer, but they suffer with joy, which is a concept that Father Rotolo addresses in this book, that the souls are never, like the damned souls would be, resentful or hateful. They're in perfect love. They perfectly love God. They are just not clean enough to enter heaven yet. And they perfectly love men on earth. And so when you pray for the souls in purgatory, they will return that charity. And I believe it was St. Catherine of Genoa is quoted in the book as saying that she had gained more favors by praying for the intercession of the souls in purgatory, sometimes than even praying directly to the saints in heaven. So they are there, and while they are suffering, they understand why they're suffering, and so they do it joyfully, even though it causes them a lot of pain.
Yeah, and that's it's one of those oxymorons, if you will. That, you know, how can somebody that's suffering be filled with joy? And right. and yet, as much as we try to contemplate God here and now and know how awesome he is, there's got to be a difference when we experience him face to face and truly realize how awesome he is, that we may come to think that, you know, the things that we did here on earth that we thought were really no big deal, even those are the things that we want to be rid of, and and welcome the opportunity to have them burn out of us, if you will, in order to become pure enough to get there. The other thing that he mentions, and anybody that I think has studied the idea of purgatory would know, that the folks in purgatory can no longer do anything of their own accord in order to advance them to heaven. That everything's either done by God or the church militant, those of us that are left behind to pray for those souls, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's why Father Galindo speaks of the duty of charity that we have toward the souls in purgatory. So this is actually perfect timing for this show, because All Souls Day is coming up so soon, and especially during the month of November, that's when our prayers can be most efficacious for the souls in purgatory. They can no longer help themselves, so they rely, as you said, entirely on our prayers, our intercession. And because they can no longer act in any way, this also means, on the flip side, that they are confirmed in grace. So they can no longer sin, which is a great relief for them, because they're no longer in danger of hell. They will go to heaven one day. It's just a matter of time and a matter of expiating for all the pain due to sin. So an interesting anecdote that's included in the book is from the life of St. Stanislaus, a Polish medieval bishop, and he actually raised a man from the dead. And this long, convoluted story about this man was needed to testify in a trial. I forget exactly what the trial was about. I think it was the property dispute. And so the bishop raised this man from the dead. He had been dead about 3 years. And it turns out the man's soul had gone to purgatory, and he was, at the end of the trial, given the option by the saints to either remain alive and live out a few additional years on earth, or to go back to purgatory. And he chose to go back to purgatory because even though he was suffering there, he knew that there he was no longer in danger of hell. And that was such a great relief to him, whereas he knew that if he returned to earth, there's always the chance that he could be tempted to sin and that he could lose his soul still. So that alone is one of the causes of joy of the people in purgatory. So they're fixed in their wills, just as everyone in hell is fixed in their will in their rejection of God. People in purgatory are fixed in their will. They can't any longer act one way or the other. They can't sin, but nor can they gain any merit. So Father Galindo goes on, and the second book about purgatory also includes many of these practical ways that we can assist the souls in purgatory. So the most effective thing is having masses said for them, of course. The church used to require that upon the death of a person, 3 requiem masses would be said for them, I believe, was the rule. So those 3 masses are the most efficacious possible things that can happen on earth, because as we know, the representation of the sacrifice of Calvary is just the source of all graces. In addition to that, just typical prayers, indulgence prayers especially, are very important. So, you know, if you've just gone to confession, really take advantage of that clean state of your soul to say some of these indulgences. Many indulgence prayers can be found in older missals or in the Rakulta, which is a book of indulgences. And something as small as making the sign of the cross can be indulgenced under the right conditions. And so making many of these little acts throughout the day, saying Hail Marys throughout the day, can really have an effect for souls in purgatory who are otherwise stuck. And one of the sad things is that many people, see, it used to be a duty of relatives to pray, obviously, for your deceased relatives. But today, when so many people have fallen away from the church or just didn't have the faith passed down at all, they don't have that family system in place anymore of prayers and sacrifices and masses being said. So that's why there's so many forgotten souls in purgatory. So it's a very good thing to ask Our Lady or ask Jesus to apply the indulgence to a forgotten soul in purgatory, for example, or if you're not praying for a specific person, because you can pray for specific people or also for just in general the holy souls. Another thing that we can do, obviously, is making sacrifices. So fasting throughout the day, small giving up the internet or something for a day, things like that that you would sacrifice to expiate for your own sins and penance or to convert sinners here on earth. and then one interesting one that Father Zhugi, I believe is how you say his name, author of our second book on purgatory, said is that the writing of good Catholic books is something that can have an effect long after the author has died. And so any good merits or any souls that the book might bring to Jesus or to the church will have an effect on the author's soul. So those merits can be applied to his soul in purgatory. So I think that that's very interesting because, of course, we are talking about the books of 2 deceased authors today. And I hope that if anyone you know, purchases these books and finds merit in their words, that they will help these souls who, God willing, will be in heaven.
Very good. Just a reminder, our guest today is Kristen Van Uden from Sophia Institute. And the 2 books we're talking about, kind of going back and forth a little bit now. The first is by Father Galindo Ruotolo, Ruotolo, and it's called The Afterlife, Purgatory, and Heaven Explained. And the second book by another deceased author is Father Martin Zhugi, J-U-G-I-E. And his book is The Truth About Purgatory and the Means to Avoid It. Before we talk about the means to avoid it, one of the things you didn't mention, I just want to put out there for our listeners, is the Gregorian Masses that are available. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with them, Kristen, but I know I learned about them from another guest we had on the radio, a woman that whose whole life is dedicated to the souls in purgatory. And she was the one that first enlightened me to these Gregorian Masses. And so the story goes that Pope St. Gregory, back in the, I think it was the 7th century, he had a friend who was a monk, Justin, that died. And so for the next 30 days, Pope St. Gregory offered his daily Mass for Justin. And right after the 30th Mass, Justin appeared to another monk and told him to let Pope Gregory know that it was the 30th Mass that got him from purgatory to heaven. And there are different monasteries that are out there that still offer Gregorian Masses. And I've after I learned about it, a couple of close friends of mine that had relatives that passed, they're not inexpensive. You're paying for 30 Masses instead of one. But, if a few people get together, we've gone in together and purchased those Masses. And I was blessed. My mother passed away the beginning of September. And one of those same friends took care of my mom and her Gregorian Masses. And I actually have it in my will that upon my passing that somebody get out there and get me some Gregorian Masses.
And
it's important because I think when we talk about this, that to those that may not be believers or are Protestant brothers and sisters who tend to poo-poo this idea of purgatory, that some of these things can almost sound like voodoo. I do this and God does that. And I think that there's a whole lot more to it. I remember when I first came back to the church and I started collecting these holy cards. And the holy cards today don't have it as much as the old ones. If you pick up some cards from the 50s through the 90s, a lot of them had the indulgence that was attached to the prayer or the duty that you did. And you don't see a whole lot of them anymore. You referenced the Book of Indulgences. And I know that our Protestant brothers and sisters, that was one of the things that they were upset about during the Reformation and, this whole idea that we could, buy our way into heaven or get time off for doing things was not looked kindly upon. But the Catholic Church has never done away with them, right? The Book of Indulgences is still there for anybody to purchase. And these things that we do, you mentioned, fasting and what have you. But there's a prayer, may the divine assistance remain always with us, and may the souls that have gone before us rest in peace.
The faithful departed.
And so praying that prayer anytime we drive past a cemetery, it is said to have an indulgence and to help those that may happen to be their physical bodies in that cemetery may help them to get from purgatory to heaven. So I think for me it's this combination of the church militant, the church suffering, and the church triumphant that our Catholic Church teaches about so well, that it's these all of us, those on earth, those in purgatory, those in heaven, working together to get as many souls as we can to heaven.
Right. And another habit I've picked up over the past couple of years is adding, "and may the souls of the faithful departed rest in peace" at the end of saying grace, because that's a prayer that you say every day, so you might as well tack that on to the end and remember them regularly as a habit. And yes, indulgences are still very much a thing, very much efficacious for souls, including yourself, but also especially souls in purgatory. And I think some of the reticence about indulgences comes from the Protestant error on justification. Unfortunately, we are not saved by faith alone, as they teach. We're saved by faith and works, and so our salvation requires our cooperation. God will not save anybody against his will. That's why hell exists, because the person has chosen to continue to reject God's graces that he will give you every single day up until the moment of your death. And so he wants us to choose him back. He gives us free will so that we may, use that will and use our intellect and the force of our actions to confirm that we want to accept these graces. So that that cooperation, of course, is not by our own merits, by God's merits, but it is by aligning our will with his.
Very good. If anybody wants to call in and pose a question, has a comment, you can reach us at 610-527-2906. That's 610-527-2906. Or call us toll-free at 888-343-2484. We're going to take a break shortly here. When we come back, Kristen, I'll admit I was, because of my familiarity with Father Delindo, I leaned more towards that book. But the subtitle for
so much more to discuss.
yeah. Especially in Father Jugi's book, where he talks about the truth about purgatory, but more importantly, the means to avoid it. And just as a segue before we take the break, you know, I know a number of people that have said that they're just hoping to get to purgatory, and I always say to them, well, what happens if you fall short? Mm-hmm. You know, we have to aim for heaven. And I think and we're blessed to know, hopefully know, that if for some reason there's still some stain of sin that needs to be taken care of, then purgatory is the fallback plan. It shouldn't be the main plan. And
exactly, and
to aim for heaven. So I'm looking forward to what Father Jugi has to say about that. So how about if we take a break now? And I think we're at a good spot, and we'll come back in a couple of minutes and carry on the conversation.
Sounds good.
Okay. For our listeners, don't go away. We're just going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Have you ever heard of seed faith? The biblical law of sowing and reaping? Many people fail when it comes to faith for finances, because they haven't planted any seed. Any farmer knows that if you want a good crop, you have to first sow the seed. The Bible speaks about seed right from the beginning in Genesis, and it's brought up all throughout the Scriptures. In the second book of Corinthians, we are told that whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, but whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Why not consider sowing your financial seed into In His Sign Catholic Radio, a ministry with a 30-year history? You should sow your financial seed into a ministry that produces good fruit. Luke tells us at chapter 6, verse 44, every tree is known by its fruit. You should sow your financial seeds where you're fed, be it here, your local parish, or other worthy ministries. Please prayerfully consider joining our monthly circle of family and friends by partnering with us financially each month. All donations are completely tax deductible and go directly to our daily expenses, like the purchase of radio airtime and keeping the lights on. Kathleen McCarthy and all of the staff at In His Sign, except Kathleen's administrator, donate all of their time and talent on a volunteer basis at no expense to the ministry. Donations to In His Sign Catholic Radio may be sent to 136 Garrett Avenue, Rosemont, PA 19010, or you can donate securely at inhissign.com. Remember, without your prayers and financial support, our mission voice will be silenced.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. And like Dennis in the announcement, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and all you do for us here financially and prayerfully that allows you to bring you shows like today's. And in these times, I think these shows are becoming more and more critical. So anything that you can do to continue your support, increase it, or at least keep it where it is certainly appreciated. Just a quick update on the ball game. Last I checked, it was 4-2 Phillies. So let's go Phils. And our guest today is Kristen Van Uden. She works with Sophia Institute Press, a great publisher of some great books. And a couple that we're talking about today are actually books that were republished by Sophia. And we're blessed to have her with us and to be talking about heaven and the afterlife and purgatory. And so, Kristen, thanks again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. And I just wanted to kick off this segment. When I happened to open Father Zhugi's book, and in the beginning he has, and I never took French, never had a French lesson a day in my life, but it says, Aux Croisus du Purgatoire. And I think translated, it means at the Crusaders of Purgatory. And then it says under the patronage of Saint Gertrude, which drew my interest because, like I said, my mother passed away a little less than 2 months ago, and a friend of mine that gave me a mass card also included in there a card of Saint Gertrude, and I just wanted to pray this prayer with you and our listeners, and then we'll go back to our mm-hmm. conversation. So in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Eternal Father, I offer you the most precious blood of your divine Son, Jesus, in union with the masses said throughout the world today, for all the holy souls in purgatory, for sinners everywhere, for sinners in the universal church, and those in my own home, and within my family, amen. And so the card says that this prayer was traditionally attributed to St. Gertrude. And then there's a comment here that when St. Gertrude made a prayerful offering of her communion, she was amazed at the great number of souls in purgatory helped as a result. And it says, please offer this prayer daily to share in the purpose of the holy souls, the sodality. For those that may not be aware, and if you become, you know, a devotee to the souls in purgatory, the Association of Marian Helpers, the Marians of the Immaculate Conception up there in Massachusetts, actually have a Holy Souls Sodality that you can join. So your prayers join with those of others to help those souls in purgatory. And I'd encourage you to check them out as well. So you spot on, before we went to the break, Kristen, we were talking about indulgences and prayers that we can offer you, and mentioned the the May the Divine Assistance prayer that you tack on to the to grace it at meals, and that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, something that we pray a couple of times a day. You tack that on, you know, who knows how many souls we're able to help. So
exactly.
Yeah, thanks for that suggestion. But I had mentioned it when we came back from the break. Maybe we can go wherever you want. But one of the things I wanted to hit was, you know, how do we avoid purgatory? And mm-hmm. Father Zhugi talks about that in his book, The Truth About Purgatory.
He does. So Father Zhugi gives us first the sacramental means. So these are, and always should be, our first go-tos, really to live a good Catholic life anyway. So none of these will be a surprise. It's just obvious that the sacraments God gives us as an outward sign of his grace will help us to make it to heaven faster. So number one, obviously, baptism, which at the moment effaces all sin and all punishment due to sin. And then also the sacrament of extreme unction, what you should get at the end of your life. And this is why we constantly pray, even in every Hail Mary, pray for us now and at the hour of our death. We're asking for the grace of final perseverance, and also for a provided death, which means a death with the sacraments in the presence of a priest. And if we are blessed enough to receive the apostolic blessing, which is a plenary indulgence at the moment of death, so those people go directly to heaven. So very important sacrament to keep in mind, and most opportune timing for a soul on its last moments here. Obviously, martyrdom is a way to make it directly to heaven. Not have to spend any time in purgatory whatsoever. Frequent confession is obviously another one to grow in virtue and to remove pain due to sin. So this actually ties into another recent Sophia book, which is called Frequent Confession by Father Benedict Bauer, a deceased German Benedictine priest and theologian. And he discusses how the frequent reception of the sacrament of confession can not only obviously forgive and pardon our mortal sins and our venial sins, but also reduce the pain due to those sins. And the grace will wash away some of the pain that would have to be expiated either here on earth through suffering or in purgatory. So really to make use of that is going to just elevate your entire spiritual life and obviously help after your death. Indulgences, as we have discussed, frequent reception of the Eucharist, of course, goes without saying, and really living a sacramental life as we should anyway, but with that added intention and understanding of these additional graces that can be gained. He also then goes on to discuss these, what he calls, holy dispositions and salutary practices that can help us to reduce our time in purgatory. So a few examples from this chapter would include what he calls the spirit of penance. So basically approaching our life, accepting every cross that comes our way as an expiation for our sins. And this really has to do with acceptance of the will of God. And we are told that God is more pleased with our just humble acceptance of crosses that he sends, even more so than crosses we may try to take upon ourselves. So he's happier with your being patient in traffic that you couldn't control than in even taking on an additional penance for yourself, for example. So the, as Father calls it, the loving acceptance of an earthly purgatory and of death. There's an indulgence to prayer that is a prayer of resignation to the will of God as to the timing of your death, which is obviously a very salutary, edifying practice. And you can even request, as Father explains, to have purgatory on earth, which is obviously like it would be a very difficult life depending on someone's circumstances. But the knowledge that the pains that we suffer here are far less than those in purgatory. And so to front load, so to speak, as much suffering as possible, not by dramatically taking on more, but simply by accepting the crosses that come our way, are something we can do. Some more practices discussed in this chapter are to avoid judging others and also detachment from earthly things. So this is just a very good practice in general, but all sadness really comes from a disordered attachment to earthly things that will pass away. And to be able to really just keep that in mind, and this ties into his last suggestion, which is a constant contemplation of the four last things, death, judgment, heaven, and hell, you'll realize that, as the scriptures say, all is vanity here on earth, and that none of this will remain on your at your personal judgment, and then on the final judgment day, all that will remain is your virtue and your sin. And so to view life in terms of that will not only put you in a state where you are growing in holiness, but will also remind you that suffering is not something to flee from, but rather something that can be embraced in the spirit of Jesus himself and will have these effects for you in the afterlife.
Very good. You know, as you're talking about these things that we can do, I think one of the sad things that's happened in recent years is, you know, with the number of folks that aren't practicing the faith, and you can have, you know, a mother or father who, you know, was a devout Catholic, maybe even a daily communicant, and when they pass, that their, you know, that their children, because of their lack of faith, you know, don't see the need to, you know, maybe call a priest in their final moments, or have a funeral, you know, a Catholic funeral for them after they pass. And so I almost feel bad having to say it, but if you're in that boat, if you have if you have children that are away from the church, and you're not certain that they know what your desires are, that you explicitly want to make sure that, you know, if at all possible, that there be a priest there to offer the prayers at your deathbed, and that you most certainly have a Catholic funeral after. If you don't make those desires known explicitly, and maybe even repeat it, and even go so far maybe as to put it in your will, that you have to know that that it may not happen. And to me, that's probably one of the saddest things that could possibly happen. And I say that because I know, because of a project Father McKay and I have worked on with his ministry, and his devotion to burying the dead, especially those that can't afford it. And when we talk to some of these funeral homes, where they literally have each over 100 urns of remains that people have never come back and gotten, either because they forgot about it, that maybe they don't care, or I think in a lot of cases they just can't afford to bury them. So, you know, we've let a couple of funeral homes know that, you know, we've got some spots available if people really need them. And, you know, they've been very kind to us and said, oh, yeah, we've got over 100 and we're not going to try and lay these all in your lap. But just to make the point that, you know, the families that don't follow through when their loved ones pass. And so, like I said, I hate that we even have to mention it. But if you have desire, you know, end of life desires, in particular to make sure that a priest is there at your deathbed, and that you absolutely want to have a Catholic funeral, make sure that it's written down, that you've talked about it. If you've got a particular priest in mind, that they're aware, so that when the time comes and they get word, that they can come find you. And you know, in my own mother's passing, those two things, Father McKay showing up and able to get to the nursing home where my mother was before she passed, and the funeral that we had for her, made her passing one of the single greatest events in my life. And it had impact on a whole lot of people that you never would have thought that would be impacted. I had siblings that were at the nursing home when he was there. And it was like a catechism class in an hour of what happens when we pass. And the beautiful send-off that Mom got with the number of priests that were on the altar, and the music. I have an aunt that's was a stone-cold atheist, who after that funeral started asking me questions. And so these things are powerful. And we may not always, you know, get that kind of impact or see it right away. It may take some time. But these things, nevertheless, are as important today as they were 25, 50, 100 years ago. And by all means, if that's what you want when you pass, make sure that folks are aware. And it may even give you an opportunity to talk to your kids, you know, about the faith. When you bring this up, to, oh, Mom, oh, Dad, yeah, well, you know, whatever you want. And it's like, no, explain to them why it's important and how important it is. And it goes right along with what you've shared with us, that those prayers that can be offered at the time of our passing can have a huge impact on where we go and how quickly we get there, right?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and I think that is a really, really important reminder to make those wishes clear, because as you said, unfortunately, it's not a given anymore in today's culture, and if you leave it up to who's ever left, they're just going to do probably the least common denominator or most secular thing. So I would add, too, like, make sure you've written down that you do not want to be cremated, because, of course, we believe in the resurrection of the body, so if you go to old Catholic cemeteries, you'll sometimes see on the grave is written, "Here will rise," because in just believing in the promise of the resurrection of the body on the last day, how we will be, if we make it to heaven, reunited with our bodies and then live on the new earth. So very important reminders. I've heard horror stories from priest friends and those who have had more experience in, like, funeral home industry and things like that, of deaths and funerals that are just not Catholic at all, because people have gotten so far away from the faith and don't understand what's going on. So it's very beautiful what you were able to do for your mother and bring your family closer to the faith in that way, because people in our modern culture have
just such an erroneous conception of death. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to think about it until the last possible minute, not realizing that none of us gets out of here alive, and they're going to have to reckon with death eventually. And so the Catholic understanding has always been memento mori, you know, remember your death, remember that this will all pass away, and that's the most important moment of your life, is the moment where you pass from this life into eternity, wherever you may be going. And so it is something that we should be constantly thinking of, and it's very much at odds with the pleasure-seeking, hedonistic zeitgeist of today. And so I've heard stories of, you know, when you think of the common secular funeral today, it's all about remembrance of the life and, oh, a celebration of life, rather than what it should be, which is an efficacious grace for the soul for where they are now. It's almost as if they don't believe in an afterlife, or they believe everyone goes to heaven, or the wrong idea that when you die, you become an angel, which is prevalent today. And all of these just very saccharine, kind of feel-good types of lies that are not true charity, because true charity is what will help the soul of the deceased. So I've heard stories of people who have been cremated, and then they do some sort of quote-unquote meaningful sort of goodbye ceremony with ashes, where I've heard one, it was thrown out of an airplane, and then the ashes came flying back in the window, just terrible. And just not respectful, number one, of the human body that God created in his image, but also doesn't take into mind at all that the funeral is, well, it has secondary effects for the living. It is primarily a spiritual grace for the dead. That's what its purpose is. So all of these kind of just feel-good type of overly sweet modern secular practices are really missing the point. And the funny thing is that when you do focus on the afterlife and foreground those spiritual graces and the spiritual purpose of this, those earthly consolations do come as a side effect of that. But reversing the precedence and the order of that will only cause to further disorient and knock out of its proper order what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. I would add, just want to add two things. The first one is, when we're talking about maybe not having kids or family that are going to make sure that you get what you desire at your time of passing, I actually had a friend of mine email me a document with all his final wishes in case his kids aren't on board. And so that's another suggestion. You know, even if you put it in your will, sometimes that will may not be opened until after you're in the ground already. So if you have somebody that's a spiritual companion, perhaps you go to sodality with or do a lot of things in the faith with, and you think that they may be able to influence your family, make sure they're aware of what you want. And, you know, with my mother, one of the blessings was when she had an envelope to be opened upon her death. And when I opened it, she already had the readings picked out, the hymns that she wanted.
Wow.
And those types of things. So it made my job a whole lot easier when it came to arranging things. And the other thing that you mentioned was in the funeral, and, you know, here lies the body of. And when I was in Ireland, we went to probably one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, called Glendalough. And I think it was County Wicklow, and it was where St. Kevin's Monastery was. And when we were there, the Irish priest that was with us, you know, explained to us that they don't call them cemeteries over there. They call them places of resurrection.
Wow.
And how St. Kevin was buried there, St. Lawrence O'Toole, and some of these other people who were famous in their own lifetimes, may not have even been saints yet, but how close people wanted to be buried to them, because on that day of resurrection, they wanted to be with each other, you know, at the next conscious moment when that happens. And today, you know, we have families that aren't even buried together, let alone extended families. So I've talked to my wife about it, and, you know, trying to make sure that we're all together, so that when the time does come for us to rise from our graves, that we are all together. I don't have to, you know, search about, and who knows, you know, it's not like you're going to Google them to get their exact location or something, but you know, the idea that we can be together. Yeah.
Very good idea.
Yeah. So, we've got just about 5 minutes left, Kristen. Again, I want to thank you for taking time, especially the whole hour. A lot of time our guests can't stay the whole hour, so I appreciate it. Again, Kristen Van Uden, she's with the Sophia Institute. The two books we've been talking about this hour are The Afterlife, Purgatory, and Heaven Explained by Father Dolinda Ruotolo, R-U-O-T-O-L-O, and the other book, The Truth About Purgatory and the Means to Avoid It, by Father Martin Zugi, J-U-G-I-E. So a couple minutes left. Anything else you want to pass along to our listeners, Kristen, before we let you go?
Sure. I would say that one of the greatest benefits for me in reading these books was the specific stories that are recounted of people who either had visions of purgatory, saints, mystics, and also people who reported visits from the souls in purgatory, because they're just very memorable. They stick in your mind. And I'll just, maybe I'll tell one of those stories that's recounted in Father Rotolo's book. So he reports a case of a woman whose young son, who's I think a teenager, had died. And she was really obviously very grief-stricken. She couldn't move on and was just spending so much time just grieving and weeping. And she had a dream of her son where she saw him with a group of people walking towards a beautiful city, which of course is heaven. And in this group, they were all kind of running along, going very quickly, except for her son, who was weighed down. And he was slow. He was at the back of the group. He was covered in water. She said he was sopping wet, and he was just having a very hard time keeping up. And it was revealed to her that the fact that he was soaking wet was her tears, and that because she was only crying for him and not praying for him, she was losing opportunity to help him to accelerate his ascent towards heaven. So from that moment on, she, of course, still felt the grief, but she was given more of a purpose, and she prayed constantly for her son. She had masses said for him, and then presumably he was able to run with the rest of the pack and make it to heaven faster. So a very empowering anecdote that just reminds us of our power here on earth to help souls in purgatory in a very visual and obvious way. And the books are filled with stories such as those. Many what are reported as ghost stories are souls in purgatory asking for our prayers. So have to be careful with those, because sometimes they're demons. But sometimes, you know, if you're having some sort of experience like that, obviously your first recourse should be to prayer anyway. And if it's a soul in purgatory, then you're specifically helping them, and you've been given that grace. So those stories were really very convicting towards me, and I think are one of the greatest benefits of having the books, just to be able to refer back to these and to conceptualize them in that very concrete, practical way.
Very good. Kristen, I'm glad we finally got together and had the opportunity to talk about these books. And with the great work that Sophia Institute's doing, I'm sure we'll be in touch in the not-too-distant future and have to have you back. Again, our guest today has been Kristen Van Uden, and we've been talking about The Truth About Purgatory and the Means to Avoid It by Father Martin Zugi, and The Afterlife, Purgatory, and Heaven Explained by Father Dolinda Ruotolo. Kristen, thank you again. I certainly appreciate it and look forward to having you back again in the future.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Just got a couple of minutes left here. And again, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and all that you do for us here at In His Sign. In these scary, dangerous, whatever label you want to put on these times that we're currently living in, it was interesting. Just this afternoon, I took my car in for an oil change last night and went to pick it up from my mechanic. And I don't believe he's Catholic. I know his wife is, and a mutual friend of a good friend of mine also uses the same mechanic and knows their son actually, you know, is a part of his vibrant church. Anyway. regardless of where he stands spiritually, you know, said to, you know, we were having a conversation today, and you know, part of it was about the conversation was about his son who had joined the Marines, and this was he got his duty or started his duty the day after our president made it known that the COVID vaccine was going to be a requirement for all members of the military service. And this young man at the age of 18 or 19 enlisted in the Marines and refused the vaccine. And so the way it went, I think they got two or three warnings before they got drummed out. But the bottom line was the day that he got drummed out of the Marines, that the line went around the building, multiple buildings. The line was that long for these guys to turn in their gear and get their general discharge for not taking the vaccine. And what he said to me was, you know, whoever thought that our military would come to this? And whoever thought we'd be living in a time where people say some of the most horrendous things you'd ever say? Again, I still can't believe when I heard the audio, I saw the video. It's not something that, you know, was edited or what have you, of a person running for governor saying that the solution to all our problems today with the high cost of living is to not have children. And those are the times that we're living in. And brothers and sisters, it now more than ever, it's time to get back to church and maybe ask our pastors to keep those doors open so we can come in there and be in the presence of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, whether it be in exposition or the tabernacle, and beg God to finally do something about these things that are going on. By changing our own habits, we can impact the world, and God can certainly impact the world if we beg Him enough, like the woman who begged the judge for a just judgment. So, again, I want to thank all of you for being with me today for whatever part of the 2 hours you were. I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. I just took another quick look before I let you go. The Phillies are up 4-2. Let's go Phillies. Not because we necessarily need a championship in this in the sports world, but because of the impact it can have in bringing people together. So let's go Phils, and I'll see you next week. Until then, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of His hand. Take care, and God bless.